The following is a CSPN Media podcast presentation.
Good evening, Rick. Would you believe it's Dr. Doom?
What's on your evil mind?
Hold your insulting tongue and mark my words well.
How about this rumor that you are really Iron Man, Mr. Stark?
And welcome to another exciting episode of the Click Nation's Comic Book Chronicles.
Yay. Oh, no sound effects.
This is where the sound effects normally would come in if one of our hosts was here. Yes, we're giving you a hard time, Agent 70, because you're not here. We can do that. I am your host, Tim D-O-double-G, and tonight I'm joined by the man not behind the sound effects, at Roddy Cat on Twitter.
What's up, everybody?
This is where the sound effects normally would come in. And we have at PCN underscore dirt on Twitter.
Yay! Woo! Oh, what happened? What happened? Uh-oh. What's going on?
He disappeared.
Uh-oh. Oh, let me put this. Here we go.
What's the effects?
For those watching on the video, who can see this nice little video dirt got going on. Hyping that Vine comic reviews.
That's right.
And tonight we have a very special guest with us. She is the writer of the graphic novel Just Princesses from Zenoscope, Crystal Velasquez.
Hello. Oh, nice.
There we go.
There it is.
Yeah. Took me a second to get it going here.
See, we weren't lying. We actually do have sound effects.
I know. I'm impressed. Hi, guys.
Thank you again for joining us. We had some, let me call them technical difficulties last week. We just had life events come up, and we had to cancel at the last minute.
It happens.
Totally on our side.
It's all right.
But Crystal was nice enough to join us tonight. So we're going to get into Just Princesses, her short but blossoming career in comics, and so much more. But for Crystal, would you like to, I guess, introduce yourself to the audience?
Okay. Hi, audience. Like you said, my name is Crystal Velasquez, kids book writer. I've written a bunch of other stuff before Just Princesses. I started out writing Maya Miguel books. I don't know if you know the show Maya Miguel, so I ended up writing four of those books, and that was my first writing job. And then after that, I wrote a few books for Random House, which are Choose Your Adventure books called Your Life But Better, Your Life But Cooler, and Your Life But Sweeter. And then I wrote two Hunters of Chaos books that were published by Simon & Schuster, and now Just Princesses. But on the side, you know, I had a whole publishing career, so I was a production editor at Random House for the past 15 years. But for this last year, I became an editor at Working Partners, which is a book packager. So basically, we come up with ideas for new young adult and middle grade books, and then we find authors to write them, and that's what I do. I'm editor now, and the writing is kind of, you know, my side career, in a way. But that's me, in a nutshell. Born and raised in New York.
Shout out to New York.
Shout out to New York. And that's where I met your co-host, who's not here. We went to high school together, Stuyvesant High School. That's also how I know Matt Wang, who will be here later, hopefully.
Yes, Matt Wang will be on the show later. He's stuck in traffic, but he'll be joining us. So you all went to high school together?
Yes, we did.
So the first question we have to ask is, you know, are there any embarrassing stories about either Matt Wang or Agent 70?
Yes. Yes, absolutely.
They can't stop it because they're not here yet.
I wish I did, but they were actually both pretty cool guys in high school, I have to say. Matt was kind of like the social director. He was always the one kind of organizing outings outside of school and stuff. Like, we all used to meet at the Wallman Rink in Central Park. You know, basically all, you know, everybody in our class, and Matt was always the ringleader getting it started. So, you know, pretty much the guy he is today, that's kind of how he was in high school, too. So, and Dave was always really sweet, like, kind of, you know, quiet on the quiet side, but, yeah, I don't have any embarrassing stories about them, unfortunately. I wish I did.
All right, well, then go find people you went to high school with, dig some up, and then come back on the show.
That would be...
Or you could just make some up real quick, you know.
I mean, I'm friends with, you know, practically everybody we went to high school with on Facebook, and, you know, they might have more stories than I have, so, yeah, I can definitely dig something up for you. I have a lot of pictures of him from high school,
Oh, we might have to.
Oh man, yes.
Add those to a post, on the theclicknation.com when this
all
goes.
All right. That I could definitely pull up and send you some.
See, when Matt shows up, now we have to ask, does he have any embarrassing stories about you?
No!
Is he singing the same tale?
I know. Oh, God. I don't think he has an embarrassing story about me, but I can't be sure.
Like frantically searching for weight? Is there anything?
Yeah, you gotta sit back and think about it.
I mean, yeah. You know, other than how I looked, because I had braces all through high school, and, you know, bangs. It was all very, you know, early 90s look. So, yeah. But I was pretty, you know, low-key in high school, too. I wasn't, you know, out there like that. So, and we went to a very nerdy school. So it's not like there's kind of wild, crazy stories about us in high school. Not too much, anyway. I don't know, maybe Matt, but not me.
I believe that. There you go.
Yeah, really.
Yeah. Yep.
Well, so how about this? So then let's talk about... Just Princesses. What is the premise of the book?
Okay, so basically, you know, it's in this fairy tale world where everybody's princes and princesses, you know, fairy tale kingdom. And the princess Katrina, her father has remarried. You know, it's been a long time since her mother passed away, and now he has remarried this queen Melinda, who turns out is a witch, and she's kind of evil. And it's her birthday that day, and she's not too happy about it because, you know, she doesn't like aging. And so she really resents the kids in the kingdom. And so she decides to cast a spell to get rid of the children in the kingdom and take all their youth for herself. But the spell backfires and it ends up getting rid of all the adults in the kingdom instead. And it ages her like 100 years overnight. So now it's up to Katrina and, you know, her stepsister and her friends to kind of, you know, figure out how to break this spell and bring the adults back and save the kingdom. So that's it. Like, we start on this whole long quest of, you know, her meeting the other, you know, princes and princesses and trying to, you know, go on this quest to find the key to breaking the spell, basically.
Was this a story that you thought up, I guess, by yourself, or was it something that, like, editors brought to you and asked you to pitch for, or
yeah,
I guess, like, how did that process go?
Well, the way it went was Matt is actually the one who found me and brought me in to the project. He had done some work with Xenoscope before on, like, board games, I guess, and, you know, video games, stuff like that. And so they were kind of starting a new thing where they wanted to launch a book series, like, you know, graphic novels, comic books, made for a middle grade audience. So, you know, like 8 to 12 year olds, mm-hmm. basically. And, you know, Matt knew that I wrote for that age group. So he kind of recommended me to them. So he introduced me to their general manager, Jennifer Bermel. Mm-hmm. And she basically told me what they were trying to do. And, you know, asked me to pitch them some ideas. And that was one of the ideas that I pitched. You know, she just, I mean, basically what I was told was that, you know, they wanted it to be a magical world. You know, they had, a, you know, an idea in mind of a couple of characters that they wanted to feature in the books. But other than that, you know, I was kind of free to do whatever. So, yeah, that's just, you know, the idea that I came up with. So I pitched them that. And I guess they were accepting pitches from other people, too. But they liked my idea the best. So I got to write the book. And
That's always got to be a good feeling when, you know, you've pitched and other people are pitching and they chose yours over everyone else's.
Yeah, exactly. And I mean, it was, you know, from when I first was introduced to her, I mean, they're on the other side of the country. I think they're in Seattle or...
Okay, I was going to ask if they were an East Coast company or not. I wasn't...
Yeah, no, they're West Coast, but I mean, I guess they do have offices on the East Coast somewhere, but... You know, she was stationed over there. So I didn't meet her in person. Like, we met over the phone. We had, like, a little phone interview, basically. Mm-hmm. And, you know, all the pitching and everything was just all over email. And so after I sent her, you know, it was like a short, you know, 2 or 3 paragraph pitch about, you know, what I thought it could be about and maybe future ideas, you know, for future sequels. And I didn't hear anything for a long time, for, like, weeks. And I just kind of thought, oh, well, you know, I pitched. I guess they didn't like it. You know, and I was, like, contacting Matt, like, oh, I guess they didn't like it. You know, thanks for putting me in touch anyway, you know. And I think 2 weeks later, she contacted me, like, okay, we loved your idea. All right, we're going to, you know, get going with this. So it was really nice. It was a nice surprise to find out they had chosen me.
Was the artist someone you were familiar with, or was that just set up through Xenoscope?
That was set up through them. I mean, I guess he's done a lot of work with them in the past, so they use him fairly often. But no, I didn't know him at all. He lives in Italy, actually.
And that is artist Manuel Praetano?
Praetano, yeah. and who seems like a really nice guy. He has since friended me on Facebook, and, you know, so I've gotten to see some of his work and talk to him a little bit. Really sweet, and he was really excited about this. I guess, I think this is maybe the longest project he's ever done. I mean, he's used to doing comic books, which tend to be shorter. This is like 204 pages, so it's a bit longer than he's used to, but, you know, he said he had a great time working on it, and, you know, but yeah, I didn't speak to him. I never met him or anything through the whole process. So,
were you used to that from, I guess, your history prior to that with your writing, or was it just writing, I guess, was it children's books with images, or was it like just novels, or what type of writing did you do in the past?
Yeah, the only one I've ever done with images was the Maya Miguel book. I mean, I wrote four Maya Miguel books. Three of them were chapter books, you know, so for slightly older readers. And then when they realized that the audience for those were skewing way younger, you know, like kindergarten and below, they decided, okay, we need to come out with like some younger reader ones that are illustrated. So the last one, which I have here, let's paint the town. This is the only one that was fully illustrated. So that was my first kind of, you know, foray into not only coming up with the words, but having to tell them, well, this is the image that should be on that page, you know. So I had to kind of like, okay, page one, Maya and Miguel are sitting at a table, they're facing a blank wall, the teacher is standing to their left, you know, and then I would have to write the dialogue, and, you know. So, but that's the only experience I had with that. All the other books that I've written were all words. So with Just Princesses, I definitely had a learning curve. They knew that I had never done a graphic novel before, but thankfully they were so patient with me and willing to kind of work with me and kind of walk me through it, mm-hmm. which was great, you know. So, I mean, I read a couple of other graphic novels, you know, contemporary ones to kind of get the idea of, you know, to get the feel for how the images are placed, how the spacing looks, how much dialogue there is, you know, that kind of thing. But
Was that a hard thing to pick up, the scripting for comics or a graphic novel, or did you pick it up kind of quickly?
I mean, I like to say that I picked it up quickly, and I'm just so talented. You know, yes, I had to it like a fish in water. Like, no, there was a learning curve. I mean, if anything, what I found, which is true in my regular writing too, is just that I'm long-winded. I'm really wordy. And so I would give in pages, because we kind of did it piecemeal. You know, I gave them, you know, set of pages at a time, and the feedback was always like, okay, this is great, and, you know, we like the words, but you need to let the art do the talking, because it is a graphic novel, and, you know, mm-hmm. they do want the art to kind of be the star, you know, and I was just like, yeah, okay, yeah, that makes sense. Here's some more words, you know, here's a lot more words. So I think that they had to do some, you know, some editing for me in that respect, while I kind of caught on. But like, once I got the feel for that, and once I started to realize, like, okay, there's a lot of work I can do to move the story along with images instead of the words, in a way, you know, it's very freeing. You know, and when you're writing a regular novel, so much goes into the description, and, you know, that can be a tedious part of writing, actually, sometimes, because you have, like, you can't just say, oh, the character walked into the room. Well, what is the character wearing, and, you know, how big was the room, and who else was there, and, you know, what did it sound like outside, and what, you know, there's a lot of description that you have to put in order to have the reader visualize what you're seeing, you know. So in the graphic novel, I could just count on the artist to do that, and, you know, give them kind of a description and say, well, Katrina is standing here, and the globe looks like this, and, you know, the mother's inside, and then count on the artist to kind of bring that to life, and he really did. An amazing way. I mean, a lot of the panels looked pretty much exactly like what I was picturing in my head.
Did you find yourself, once you got into the groove of the writing, did you tend to start with the visual and then add the dialogue, or did you start with the dialogue and then go back in and visualize?
Yeah, no, I started with the visual, because once I realized, you know, like I said, that the art was meant to be the star and that it could do a lot of the work for me, you know, that was the first thing, because, I mean, the way I wrote it out was I would write, let's say, like, page two, panel one, you know, and then I would describe what the art was supposed to look like, and then I would go in and add the dialogue. And so, you know, some of the adjustments were, like, as I wrote the dialogue, if I realized, okay, this person says this, but then the other person has, like, kind of a sarcastic reaction to it or something, then I would go back and kind of adjust the art to say, like, you know, Prince Max looks at her with one eyebrow cocked, you know, like he's not believing her or something like that. you know, to match what I've written. So there were like adjustments, but yeah, I tended to start with the art, even though I knew where the story was going. You know, I kind of had to visualize it first. I was sort of picturing it like a cartoon in my head,
mm-hmm.
so I could see the visuals first and then figure out what they were going to say.
Yeah, I was going to say it has a nice cartoon feel to it, and yeah. like later on in the story, when the narrator actually becomes like a character, starts interacting yeah. with them, I could, you know, in my mind, I was hearing the voice, you know, kind of booming through the you know, the TV set as the characters yeah. are listening and speaking back to them.
Yes, exactly. That's great. I'm glad you got that, because that wasn't.
And I'm out. I got it. That's my one. I'm out.
No, I mean, that's what I was hoping for. I mean, you know, going back to when we were kids and watching like old Bugs Bunny cartoons and Wile E. Coyote and stuff, and especially in the Wile E. Coyote and Roadrunner cartoons, and sometimes there was a narrator kind of explaining to you the action, and Wile E. would interact with that narrator, would look straight into the camera and kind of break that fourth wall. I always really loved that. So I thought if I could incorporate that, it would be kind of a funny little thing too. So glad that got across.
So do you see more stories in this universe?
Oh yeah. I've already, you know, gotten the news that number two is definitely going to happen. So I'm starting to think of what's going on. I mean, because, you know, this one ended sort of...
With them going off on the quest.
Right, with them going off on another quest. So I think there's going to be lots of stories, and what I envision is for each of the characters to have kind of their own story arcs, too. It's not all going to be about Katrina, you know, and they're still going to meet other princes and princesses from other kingdoms and, you know, have other adventures. So yeah.
Create your own shared universe.
Yeah, why not? Why not?
It's all the rage.
Exactly.
Yeah, but then you merchandise into the cartoons and the action figures and the video games. I mean, that's how it all starts, right?
Hey, man. Mm-hmm. I hope so. That would be awesome. I would be really excited about that.
So it's 200 pages, like the ballpark that they gave you, or did that just how it worked out?
No, they wanted it shorter, but...
Oh. Like I said, remember, she's wordy.
I'm wordy. I am long-winded. And, I mean, I tried. I really tried to edit myself down and kind of, you know, cut out scenes, but... It's just, this is how it went in my head. This is how I, you know, I mean, I guess I could have cut out, you know, maybe the part where they go into the mountain or, you know, part with the alligator. But I kind of was falling in love with it as I was writing it, and it hurts to cut things out after you fall in love, you know. So, yeah, it probably ended up a little bit longer than they wanted, but I think they would say that it turned out the way it should have, and, you know.
For the most part, you got pretty much what you wanted to put in.
I think so, yeah. I mean, and I can tell, like, I didn't get to see the finished book until it was a book. Like, I didn't get to review the pages. They showed me, like, a few illustrated pages along the way, but that was even before it had been colored in or anything. I saw, you know, just without the color, without the lettering, I just saw the art, and that was just on a few pages. So I really didn't see the finished book until it was a book. And, you know,
how nerve-wracking was that?
It's scary. You're giving up a lot of control, you know, because at least like with you know, with the full novels I've done, you get to see the copy edit, you get to see a first pass, you know, and there's still time to change things, and you know, and if the editor has changed something, you can kind of say, oh, I don't like this, and I want this back, and you know, so there's a lot of back and forth. But with this, there wasn't as much. I mean, they didn't change a lot, you know, and the changes that they made were for the better, I think, you know. But I did read. You know, once I read through the whole book, I could see things that they had edited out, you know, things that they had streamlined. And they were completely smart choices, and I'm glad that they did it. But, yeah, it's, you know, some of it was a surprise to me. But I think it came out great, and I really can't complain at all. I mean, this is why they're professionals in what they do. They really know their stuff.
So do you have any plans to start going to conventions?
Yeah, I'm actually going to Baltimore Comic-Con in... September 1st and 2nd, so I'll be...
Is that going to be your first Comic-Con ever?
Well, I went to New York Comic-Con last year, like, as we were working on this project, so I could meet the people from Xenoscope, because they had a booth there, and so I got to meet the whole team while they were here in New York, which was great. But I think I'm going to be at New York Comic-Con this year as well, signing books this time. So, yeah, it'll be my first time being at a con... actually signing things, but
so you, well, you, Will you be at the Zenoscope booth?
Yeah.
Nice.
I know, it'll be exciting. I'm really excited about it. But going to Comic-Con last year was my first time going to Comic-Con ever. And it was awesome. But, you know, because I not only did I get to meet the Zenoscope people, but they kind of just, you know, go ahead and look around, you know. And I got to meet, you know, all these artists. When you go to Artist Alley and you actually meet the people who draw the comics and, you know, work on these movie franchises. I met one of the artists who does Powerpuff Girls, which is, like, amazing to me. It was really cool. And the guy who wrote The Hug Machine, I got to meet him. And, you know, I bought some Star Wars paraphernalia for my brother. It's great. I'm wearing a Star Wars t-shirt right now, by the way, that I bought at Comic-Con.
Rogue One, December.
I know, I'm so excited. I can't wait. Yeah, my brother and I, we were the people that were on, like, a two-hour line waiting for the last movie to come out, so. Yeah. And so he'll be at my, I'm bringing my brother to Comic-Con this year, so he'll actually get to see me signing books at Comic-Con.
Is he younger or older brother?
He's older. He's, yeah, 4 years older than me, so.
Okay. That's a good age. That's the separation between me and my brother.
He's perfect, right?
Yeah.
Yeah.
4 years.
Yeah.
There's five between me and mine, so.
Oh, really?
Mm-hmm.
That's good. It's close enough in age that you can hang out as adults. It's not so close that there's some kind of competition or anything.
Well, I always say 4 years is good because you miss the high school years together.
Yeah, it's true.
He's leaving right when I was starting, so that was perfect.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Exactly. Yeah, he and I have never gone to the same school. Well, no, I guess in elementary, but just for a short while, you know, for a few years. But anyway, we're really close now, so I'm really excited that he'll get to see me at Comic-Con signing books.
Hold on. So bear with me. Okay. Matt Wang says he's ready, so I'm going to try to get him on here.
Okay.
But as I'm doing that, I was going to ask you, as far, like, from start, like, starting to ending of Just Princesses, how long was the whole, like, from starting the project to when the book was actually out for readers to pick up?
Okay. It was almost a year. To me, it felt really fast, but I think it's because at the time when I met the general manager, you know, when I met the Zenoscope people, when we had that first phone interview, I think that was in May. That was like mid-May. And right around that time is when I was leaving Random House. So, you know, I was trying to work on the book pitch while I was, you know, clearing out my desk at Random House and getting ready to start this new job. And, you know, there was a lot going on. And, you know, there were, like I said, there was a waiting period. Like, once I had pitched the idea, there were, you know, a few weeks went by, and then, you know, I gave her a few pages to show to people to make sure the project was going to go forward, you know. So there was a lot of lag time, but I finished, I think the last, when I finished the final manuscript was in March, and now it's going on sale. I think it was supposed to be on sale August 2nd, but I think now it's going to be September 16th. So, yeah, it was almost a year, I guess.
Is that faster or slower than book publishing?
No, faster. Faster. Because usually with book publishing, I mean, depending on what kind of book it is, but, you know, because I was a production editor too, so usually once we get the manuscript, it's about 8 months from, you know, the time you actually get a manuscript till it goes on sale, you know. So in this case, that 8 months was like me writing the book and them doing the illustrations and the lettering and it going on sale, you know. So, like, everything was in a, you know, kind of more compressed time frame.
Did you find yourself putting a bit of yourself into any of the characters of the book?
I think if anything, I was probably the narrator. Because the narrator's sort of like the reader, you know, like how the reader would react to this, like, oh, aren't they being ridiculous right now? And, you know, like, kids, don't do this at home. This is kind of stupid that they're doing this, you know. That's
like
kind
the tattletale when the narrator's, you know, filling them in. And like, well, this is really what happened. Like, kids, yeah. I hear my kids do that all the time where they're like, that's not what happened. This is what really happened. She's lying.
That's why I love that panel where the narrator's like, so I was happy to fill the king in on what his wife had been up to, and then, like, actually see the panel from the book, you know. So, yeah, I guess the narrator I would most identify with, but the character I would most want to be, though, I guess is Red. I think she's the coolest. And I like that she's really tough, and she, you know, is kind of wary of people, and, you know, she's good with a weapon, she's quick to fight. Whereas Katrina, like, I wanted, I kind of modeled her after, like, my idea of Cinderella. You know, hi, Matt. But, yeah, Katrina was supposed to be, like, the stereotypical clueless storybook princess, you know, who thinks the king and all his men are supposed to protect her and do everything for her, and, you know, that's definitely the furthest away from me, I think. So, Red is a little closer to how I am in real life. Like, come on, you know, you need to do this for yourself. Let's go.
All right, Matt, now that you're here, we need embarrassing high school stories. So, any you can fill us in, just go ahead, knock them out.
I told them there are none, Matt.
I'm sworn to secrecy.
We invite Matt on, and we immediately put him on the hot seat.
I know. All right. No, Matt, you can tell some if you have any, but I don't think you have any.
We'll talk about it during reunion.
What?
we'll make sure to be recording there as well.
All right. No, there's the square dancing class.
Oh. Yeah.
You remember that class?
It was nice. Oh, maybe yes, it was. Well, that's not embarrassing. I stand behind my square dancing skills.
We had a square dancing class, I remember.
Yeah. That's a useful life skill, okay?
Yeah. Oh, yeah, definitely. There's a, sliding down the escalators. I got the deans would pick me off all the time for doing that.
They have since put in, like, speed bumps?
Yeah.
On that ramp between the escalators so that nobody can do that anymore. I'm so glad we were there when we were, because when we went to Stuyvesant, our senior year was the first, we were the first class in the new building, and it wasn't finished yet when we started going there. So there were a lot of things that were just, you know, the bridge was half done, and, you know, so that space between the elevators used to be smooth, and we used to all slide down it. But now they've got little speed bumps so that we can't.
And some of us have remote controls because they have TVs in every classroom, and then what we would do is just turn the TVs on randomly in class.
That's right. Well, Matt, you were in Senior Sing, right?
Yeah. So we were in a musical competition together.
Yeah.
Between all the grades.
And so there are pictures of us in, like, 90s rave gear, like whistles and, you know, glow-in-the-dark sticks and stuff.
On stage,
like that.
Yeah.
That was part of
their video.
There is VHS video of
there
it,
is,
but
I've
only seen it, but I don't own it.
I might have some. I might have a little bit of it.
Plus, you'd need an actual VCR to play them.
Well, that's yeah, there is that
or
too.
Transfer them, you know, hey,
I know.
The shops.
I have actually a lot of video from high school, but it's all on these, you know, little camcorder tapes that I have to transfer over, I guess. But once I do, I'll send it right to you guys, once I find Matt on them.
And so, Matt,
Oh, no. Well.
Go ahead.
Oh, no, I was going to say, Chris told some great stories about the Agent 70, too, from back in the day.
What?
We asked that, too.
Yeah.
Wait, I have stories?
Well, I actually just found my yearbook, and I found what Agent 70 wrote in my yearbook, and he made a comment about Deathblow. Jim Lee's Deathblow from Image Comics.
Get out.
Yeah.
So that's easy to date for those listeners out there.
That's also a photo that we need to have scanned in.
I will take a picture and send it to you guys.
I mean, I've got my yearbook handy. I can show you Matt in the yearbook right now.
Oh, Jesus.
I can do it.
I didn't have my glasses on. I just saw that picture. I didn't have my glasses on. You should show Agent 70 also.
You want me to get it? Seriously, I can get it.
Yeah, go pick it up.
Do it.
Oh,
do it.
I'm going.
Yeah.
So, Matt, what's been going on with you, sir?
You know, not much. I actually, read some comics. Was a little disappointed by Suicide Squad 1, and I love Suicide Squad, but we'll talk about that later.
Yes.
Yep.
And, Jesus.
So that we all had the same impression. So before you got on, Matt, we had learned that you're the one that helped introduce Crystal to the Zenoscope crew.
Yeah, Crystal's written some great books, the Hunter of Chaos series, and she never read any comics, so I just kind of pinged her and said, hey, I know some people looking for writers, and I know the Zenoscope guys really well, and I was like, I'll just put those two together, and it was a match made in heaven, and all of a sudden, like, 8 months later, all of a sudden, there's a comic book in my hand.
Right. It's pretty amazing. Well, thank you so much, Matt, for that. Still.
No, of course. The book is great. I read it. I gave a copy to Agent 70. I hope you guys read it soon, but I think it's a great all-ages book. It was a lot of fun. You know, I think it was, there was a lot of twists and turns I wasn't expecting. I'm a jaded reader. And but the book, yeah, the book was a lot of fun. I just couldn't put it down. I think the art came out really well. Like,
it did,
I don't
right?
know that artist at all. Yeah. The art was, like, perfect. And, you know, hopefully, you know, I know Scholastic's going to make a big push for it. So hopefully you'll see it in the Scholastic Book Club.
Yay. So awesome.
And we heard that there's going to be a part two.
Yeah. Oh, there is. Awesome.
There is. So yay.
Scoop on the comic.
Story continues.
When's that coming out?
I mean, I haven't even started, you know, writing up pitches.
Tuesday.
For
Tuesday.
We'll come out Tuesday. That was the funny thing with this book. Like, once they decided they wanted me to write it, she was kind of like, all right, great. So can we have the finished manuscript in, like, 2 weeks? I was like, no. Probably not.
Have a full-time job, you know.
Yeah, that was the thing.
No pressure there.
Yeah, that was the thing. It's hard having a full-time job and doing the writing thing at the same time, you know. So having to squeeze it in early in the morning. And like I said, when this book thing started, I was leaving my job at Random House and starting a whole new job. So I was having to learn, you know, a new job I'd never done before. So I was having to learn how to be an editor and also learn how to write a graphic novel all at the same time. So, oh, wait, so... I don't know if you can see that.
Oh, wow, look at my hair.
I know.
Put the focus on that, Tim. Put the focus
on
that.
Yeah,
there you go. Yeah. Can you zoom in?
That was a 90s part. Jesus Christ.
Yeah.
That was a 90s part. That was definitely
longer part. Than that, too.
Yeah.
Like down to here.
Yeah, it was down there. But, yeah.
But, you know, fair play. I'll show mine, too.
Oh, we get to see everyone tonight.
What?
I was saying we get to see everyone tonight.
Yeah.
See? Wait. Where am I? Oh, there I am.
Okay.
That's me in high school.
All right, so everybody listening on SoundCloud and Stitcher, make sure you get over to YouTube and check out the actual video feed because you are missing out on great material here.
Oh. We never saw Dave, though.
Oh, yeah. Oh, you're pull up Agent 7, they pull up Dave.
Oh, yeah. I'm sorry, I forgot.
Are there any square dancing photos in that yearbook?
This is why you should be watching the video feed, people.
Exactly.
Oh my god, this photo's funny. Okay.
Oh, no, he's gonna kill us.
I know. There he is.
Yes.
Doesn't he look like a future lawyer?
Really.
The hair is awesome.
The hair is great. I love it.
Got the suit and tie on.
Oh yeah. Oh yeah. Very professional. I wonder, what was Matt? What was your quote?
Oh, it was from the Epic of Gilgamesh, and then it was from Shakespeare.
Oh, what a tangled web we weave when at first we practice to deceive! I am the King Rook, the Slayer of Humbaba.
I'm mad that you remember what your quote was. I can't remember what I did yesterday.
I remember we even had quotes.
Yeah, we didn't do quotes in ours.
Wow.
I can't remember if we did or didn't. That's how bad my memory is.
Put all that behind you now, huh?
Yeah.
You did say it was a nerdy high school, too, so that's awesome.
Yep. That's why I think we were all excited that we had quotes. We're like, oh, I have so many ideas.
Oh, yeah. No, that was hard, yeah. And that's why I put two in. Yeah.
Yeah. Like, you only had so many characters, you only had so much space. See, and again, you guys already know, I'm wordy. I wanted to put paragraphs in, you know, and they're like, no. You get two sentences. Calm down. So
what else are you working, Crystal? What else are you working on right now besides obviously the sequel to Just Princesses? But what else do you have to play?
Well, I'm actually in the middle of writing another a sort of young. I guess it's young adult. I mean, the character's like 19, but I can't really tell you about it because it's a writer for hire thing, and it's not even going to be under my name. But and it's being published in Germany, so So that's what I'm working on right now, and then. And then after that, I'm working on another project that I'm very excited about, but I'm not sure I'm allowed to talk about yet.
Okay.
But that's going to be 4 books.
Cool.
Yeah, so I have to immediately, you know, get that done, because I think my first draft for that is due, like, September 20th, so...
Oh, wow, okay.
Yeah, but it'll be great, it'll be so much fun, and I'm really excited about it, and I think you guys will be too, once I'm allowed to...
I think one of the reasons why I recommended Crystal for the Zenoscope was, you know, I think Crystal and I have this same mindset about trying to promote more kind of like a diverse community within the main characters and for a diverse audience. And I know Crystal and I share that kind of mindset about pushing that right now, because I think it's important for kids to see characters that aren't the typical archetypes we've seen in the past.
Right. So I definitely tried, you know, with just princesses to make it as diverse as I could, and it's still going to be, I already have ideas for the next one, you know, that it's going to be even more so. But, I mean, it's funny because I do care about that very much, and of course then I end up with a book whose main character is white, with, you know, blonde hair and blue eyes. But it's because of the character, you know, I wanted her to be modeled after Cinderella, and she's just kind of typical, you know, kind of clueless princess. So, but I think it'll be great as we go along to see such a really wide range of characters, especially female characters, you know, kind of taking the leadership hero role that might usually be taken by boys, you know, like kind of being their own action stars. So I really like that too. Yeah, I'm excited. I've got ideas for future stuff. And yeah,
How do you feel about the new black young female Iron Man?
Oh, I love that. I love it. So great. I'm really excited about that. And I'm excited about La Borinquena. It's coming out in October. And she's a Puerto Rican superhero.
Yeah,
very exciting.
I'll introduce you to the inker, Emilio. He will be at New York Comic Con.
All right, awesome.
Yeah.
As you know, I will be there too. So.
Yeah, no, I'm excited for your signing. We'll all crash.
Yay, good. I'm really excited. And you know what, I started my publishing career at Tor Books, so Tor always has a big presence at Comic-Con, and so does Random House, you know, the Del Rey department, so it'll be a lot of people I know from publishing there, but getting to see me there as a writer, very cool. I'm so, so excited.
Great. And when your books start coming out, the ones you can't talk about yet, in German and whatnot, you'll have to make sure to come back on and pimp them.
Okay. I will do that. Well, I mean, I don't even know. Like, yeah, like I said, the one that's coming out abroad, I'm not even sure I'm allowed to.
That's right, because it's not under your name. So.
Right. But the other ones, I think will be. So I will come back and tell you about those, and it'll be very exciting.
Cool.
So, yay.
Crystal, make sure to let everyone know where they can follow you on the internet and social media.
Yes. Okay. You can find me on Twitter at CVelasquez6. You can find me on Facebook at facebook.com/CrystalVelasquezAuthor. Or you can go to... My website is a work in progress. But right now, it's CrystalVelasquez.wordpress.com. You can find me there. And and I have a blog, which is yourlifebutbetter.blogspot.com. So find me at any of those places and write to me. I love it when kids write to me. It's the best. And, yeah. Well, I love it when anybody writes to me.
I was going to say, I'd write to you. It probably looked like a kid wrote it.
Yeah. No, I recently had a kid. I think she's 13 and lives in California. And she sent me fan art for Hunters of Chaos, which I thought was great. Like, so fun. You know, so I've actually started to get fan letters, you know, over email and everything, and it's so, so touching and, you know, really sweet. So, yeah, send me stuff like that. I'm all about it.
Will do.
Yeah.
All right, so follow Crystal on Facebook, Twitter, her blogs, WordPress.
Yes.
And go make sure to pick up Just Princesses.
Please do. Please do. It'll be so nice. Okay.
Again, thank you for joining us tonight.
Thank you for having me. I had so much fun. Matt, it's good to see you again.
See you soon.
All right. I'll see you guys.
Have a good night.
You too. Bye.
Ah.
Bye.
Ready for Ed Reed?
I think you would say that now. Let's see. Let us do...
As Doug shows us Transformers, Bumblebee, and Grimlock.
Yeah. Hey, Matt. I don't know if you're still there. You're hidden. But just want to let you know that this is how you cause a fight in my household. he sent this from San Diego. And, of course, because I love Transformers, but this was an Entertainment Earth exclusive. So it's like, ooh, exclusive. Like, this is great for my collection. But it's from the cartoon show that my son loves. So my son was like, oh, I want those. And I was like, no, these are for me. He's like, yeah, but everybody knows you got a kid, so they could be for me. And I was like, no, they're for me. So this
they
is
have to stay in the box.
Yeah. Well, no, the box is open.
Wait, oh, okay.
Yeah, I just, you know, but anyway, yeah, so that's how you start a fight in my family.
So yeah, so Matt Wang is awesome, by the way. Sent PCN Dirt some Transformers, sent me some Scotty Young pins and two books.
Something too, I haven't gone to check yet. But.
Yeah, and actually, we finally have a printed copy of Emergent Genesis because I backed it on Kickstarter, but I always back the print your own because I hate waiting like 6 months for the Kickstarter like printed package stuff to come through. So we've had it just on these little paper cards for the longest time. So now we actually have the actual box. So that's actually that I let my son take that. That was the first thing he grabbed out of the thing, and so that's up in his room. But then the Transformers are gonna have to fight over.
Yeah, it was pretty sweet that those Transformers were pretty sweet. I knew they came with something else I got, so I thought you might enjoy it.
Well, thank you.
All right, let's see. So we're going Ed Reed. We'll do Busted Tees. This episode of the Comic Book Chronicles show is sponsored by Busted Tees, your home for funny, awesome, cool tees that are sure to get your friends' attention. Busted Tees puts many of their popular designs on sale each week. Choose from several eye-catching t-shirts inspired by pop culture such as BB-8, like Thumbs Up, and Droid Evolution from Star Wars, Brick and Morty from Rick and Morty's Legos, Bernie Larry 16, Pretty, Pretty, Pretty Good from Curb Your Enthusiasm, and Simojis, the many faces of Samuel L. Jackson as Emoji, and much, much more on sale. To keep our podcast free, order from Busted Tees by going to cspn.us, that's cspn.us, then clicking on the Keep Our Podcast Free link. Click on the Busted Tees banner, and then shop for awesome t-shirts. Busted Tees through cspn.us. Do it today. And, of course, that one doesn't work. Oh, there we go. Okay. Tim,
I was muted. So we have 2 weeks of books to go over this week, and it would have been nice if I actually like organized what I read. I feel like since I haven't been on the show in like a month, my perception of time is all screwed up. I don't know what I read in and when it came out. I have stuff on my iPad here, so I kind of know. For this week, I know what I read, but last week might be a little chore. But I'm actually about to try to pull up last week's list here to see, make sure I'm not missing anything. And actually, that's an easy way I can do this, since we have folders for this.
And I told you to let me tap it in another room. I'm going to go get it.
I can actually just open the folder. But since Matt Wang mentioned Suicide Squad when he first got on the show, that might be a good place to start, because I'm a Rob Williams fan. I actually liked the Suicide Squad movie when I saw it, whatever, 2 weeks ago. And the Rebirth issue was all right, so I was excited for the new number one Jim Lee art and whatnot, but I came away slightly disappointed. It wasn't all that. For one, Jim Lee's art, you could tell he didn't take his time like he normally does. Of course, he's a busy man being the, co-publisher at DC Comics. But his line work that wasn't as detailed, and the story just was kind of meh to me.
Yeah, the big thing I noticed with the artwork that kind of drove me nuts is that Amanda Waller, he drew like two faces of Amanda Waller and just reused them, it looked like, over and over. And
like her facial expression didn't change, did it?
Yeah, I was going to say, at no point did her expression change or her mouth open. It was always just either the three-quarter shot or like the straight-on shot, and that was it every single time. And it seemed like the only character he really put a lot of emotion into was Harley. Apparently he loves that character, but I guess because of his problem with deadlines, you only get 13 pages of the main story, and then there's a 7-page backup character profile, and that's how they're going to do the book from now on, because it's bi-weekly. So that's the only way that Jim Lee can keep up with that schedule, so he's still doing more or less one comic a month. They're just chopping it in half, and you get half every 2 weeks, and then a backup story. And so I didn't hate it. It wasn't, obviously not the worst thing I read this week, but I got done with it, and it was just very underwhelming because of the way that it was cut so short, and I just didn't feel like Jim Lee's artwork was all that spectacular.
I actually got excited when I got to the backup story drawn by Jason Fabok, starring Deadshot, right? I think it's, mm-hmm. yeah. Because I was like, ooh, it's Jason Fabok, who I loved during the Darkseid War storyline. So I was happy to see his art. But so, yeah, not sure if it's a good sign if the backup story had me more excited than the main story. And then the whole shipping bi-weekly for Suicide Squad, I know they want to set it up as one of the pillars of the DC Universe going forward and have it be a book that has, you know, impact and meaning throughout the rest of the DC Universe. But I don't know if this set of characters, unless they're actually going to kill characters, you know, with Suicide Squad, every character has a risk of dying in a mission. Unless they're actually going to go through with that, I'm not sure if it's the best strategy to have this be a double shipping title.
No, I agree with you. I love Jim Lee, I love Suicide Squad, and I was like hoping that this book would be awesome. I mean, if you ever go to my office, you see Jim Lee original art, and you see, like, you know, Deadshot there. And I was just really disappointed. You know, I thought, you know, 13 pages of Jim Lee art, you're totally right. You're right, I felt like it was all rushed. And the nice cover. I thought the story was, you know, very average. And, you know, I grew up on the Suicide Squad from the late 80s and the early 90s. I mean, I was picking up 25-cent copies to throw out my collection. And if you look at those old issues, they're packed with story. And there was, you never knew who was going to live and who was going to die. You know, they were willing to kill off main characters or maim them. Or, like, you know, there was an issue where you thought Deadshot was killed. And, you know, when you read the interviews, he was supposed to have died. But, you know, the writer loved him so much, John Ostrander, he decided to, like, resurrect him. The editor was like, oh, I thought he'd die. And with this cast of characters, who's going to die? You're not going to kill Harley. You're not going to kill Deadshot. Are you going to really kill Killer Croc? And there's no fear of someone dying. And, I mean, they say next issue someone's going to die, and I have a guess on who it's going to be. But, I mean, I don't have that fear anymore. And the old Suicide Squad run was so packed with story. There's so much happening in one issue, and in this issue, they basically went up to space and came down.
Yeah, and one of the things that I don't know, I'd say it bothered me. I don't know if that's really the right term, but they put together this squad, and it's like, I need five of the, you know, meanest, baddest, blah, 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 whatever, and it's all the people from the movie. So it's like, there's no real explanation given as to why we're going to pick these characters, the characters from the movie, because I expected, you know, like a one page maybe for each character, kind of establishing them and showing their personality and how they interact and blah, 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 whatever. And instead it was just like, oh, here's a bunch of random people, get in this ship and there you go, off on your mission. And I just felt like they missed an opportunity to really lay things out, because if you're someone who didn't read it before and maybe you saw the movie and you thought, oh, you know, this might be fun, I wonder, you know, how this relates to the movie or how is this different, who these characters are, you know, all of that type of stuff, and they just kind of skip it. It's like, just nope, here, we're throwing a bunch of people out there. And I expected a handful of, let's grab some other C, D, Z list DC villains so that we've got some cannon fodder so we can, you know, kill some people off, but instead, no, it's just the cast of the movie, here they go. So, I don't know, I was disappointed in it. I didn't hate it, but it felt like a really missed opportunity.
I know in the future issues, they're teasing, like, a surprise new team member will be joining. I wonder...
El Diablo?
Well, no, I remember in the, whatever, DC Rebirth,
it was DC, universe. It was either General Zod, Doomsday... Or Mr. Blake. Yeah.
And it's like going to be one of those three. So it's like, okay, you know, you're going to put, you know, important DC Universe characters in this so readers will care about it more. I'll be interested to see how they play it, because I don't think it's Doomsday. It'll probably either be Zod or Mitzelplitz. Actually, I guess it could be Doomsday if they're doing something with the space artifacts and whatnot.
I think
disappeared
also
in Superman.
I think what also bothered me was, you know, if you look at, and that sound like an old man, like, yelling on his lawn, yelling at people, but, Belle Reve, the prison, was, like, it was a normal-looking prison before. It was, like, in the Louisiana swamps, right? And they were trying to hide it. And then you look at this prison, you know, their base, and so, you know, highly technological, you know, there are a lot of...
It's emerging out of the water, like, it's coming up like the Legion of Doom headquarters, yeah.
And I'm talking.
Pardon me?
No, I was saying, now you're talking. You're bringing up Legion of Doom.
Yeah. But, yeah, where are the red shirts? Where are the cannon fodders? Where are the Slipknots? Where are the people that, you know, and I think in the original run, when they brought, you know, very powerful characters in, and here's a spoiler from the original run in the 80s, but they brought Mashina from, like, the New Gods in, and she was hiding out with the Suicide Squad, and she became, like a Rambo-type character with a big gun called the Duchess. Like, that's how they incorporated some of these big guns in there, and it felt a lot more grittier, and I think that's why I really love the comic. It was gritty, like you took supervillains and put them into realistic situations.
I guess the other thing is that you've got this giant prison that you can pull any character out of, and it's just, oh, you guys are going to break in and steal something, so these are the characters we're grabbing. It's like, why these characters? Like, it didn't feel like any thought really went into, for this particular mission, we need this guy to do this, and this guy to do that, and you're going to run interference, and you're the muscle to bust through this door, and you're going to be the one that's going to be hacking into this system, and, you know, there was no sense of that. It's just, we're grabbing a bunch of people, and off you go, and there was no real establishment of who are they going up against, and, you know, what, just nothing. It's just, you got enough story. If this was a Saturday morning cartoon, then this is your first, like 3 minutes or 4 minutes of the cartoon of just, here's a bunch of characters, we'll throw them together, and then some stuff's going to happen. But just not anything that establishes anything particularly powerful or sets up your story well or gives a bond to these characters or puts these characters at each other's throats. Or, you know, the only thing we got is Killer Croc throwing up in his space helmet, and that was the most exciting thing that happened in this issue. So, everyone else is muted, so...
I think that's all we can say.
What else do we want to rip apart? I'm going through last week's. All Star Batman, I guess, was a big book, right?
Yeah.
Anyone else to read it?
Yeah.
Nope.
I thought it was pretty fun. It felt like Scott Snyder was having a little more fun in his Batman writing. Batman was a lot more. He had more humor in his, like, comeback. He had a lot of, like, witty comebacks to the villains he was fighting. And, like, giving pedestrians, giving them a nice little wink, like, you know, everything's going to be okay. So, for those who don't know, this is Scott Snyder's new Batman vehicle where he can tell... they make sure to let you know his in-continuity stories of Batman with a rotating team of all-star artists as... Scott Snyder deconstructs Batman's Rogues Gallery, starting with Two-Face, Harvey Dent.
Well, basically, he didn't want to do a twice-monthly book. He just wanted to keep doing his standard monthly format, so this is how they figured it out for him. So we have this cover from John Romita Jr. with the weirdest-looking Batarang ever in the history of Batman.
Yeah, I guess that never, doesn't really play like a factor in the story.
But it's just a weird-looking Batarang. Like, what is the deal with this thing?
Every time I look at that, I think of it's like a. I keep thinking it's a like a tool to use on a car. Like
yeah, I was thinking it's like a Jaws of Life or something.
Yeah,
yeah.
Some random thing. I don't know. I thought the story was okay. The one thing that I didn't particularly care for was that it starts in the middle. I was expecting there to be more going on with the characters that establish the story. It's these people in a truck stop, so I thought maybe one of them had some sort of secret or someone was, you know, holding on to something or whatever, but it was just so you could have these moments before they crash through the windows. And I don't know, I guess I just expected more out of it, like to go back to it somehow. Like we spent a whole page of these people having these conversations and establishing them. We got more establishment of the people in the diner in All-Star Batman than we got in Suicide Squad, but it didn't really... go back to that, so I don't know. I just felt off on that, but I mean, otherwise, I thought the story was an interesting setup that that Harvey Dent has blackmail on basically everybody in Gotham City, and he's trying to set himself up to fail, which is an interesting way of looking at the situation. But I don't know if it was worth being $4.99 versus $3.99.
Yeah, remember back when Snyder and Capullo. Like raged against the machine when they tried DC tried to bump up the price of Batman and they got him to lower again. I guess he didn't put up a fight this time, or he was cool with it.
Well, supposedly to justify the higher price, they have the backup stories, so that's why you have the backup of the new Robin who's not Robin, and the training that he's getting in his storyline in the background. That's how they justify the extra $2 on top of it, but I don't know. Yeah.
What are you going to call him?
We don't know yet. Just want to do kid. Thomas. Mr. Thomas. I liked how the coloring effect changed in the on the panels when it was from Two-Face's point of view. Mm-hmm. It took me like half of the story until it dawned on me that's what was going on.
You thought it was just bad coloring?
I really didn't know what was going on. I was like, oh, okay. So, All-Star Batman. And actually, is it actually going to be monthly?
Yes, this is not a twice-monthly book.
Yeah, I didn't know if it was going to be like longer than that between
oh,
stories.
Well, I mean, that's what the plan is, but, I mean, you never know.
Second,
every
okay.
6 weeks, a new issue actually comes out.
Yeah. All right. Well, this was fun from last week.
Vision was last week.
Ooh.
I've been saving that. I almost read it today, but I was like, I was in the right mindset. I like to be, you know, clear focus when I'm reading Vision so I can enjoy it fully. That's how much I enjoy the series.
Yeah. It's fair. And it continues to
tell
be
us about
enjoyable.
It.
That's just, oh, boy, am I glad I put notes in here.
How cool was that cover?
That cover was pretty cool. I noticed, though, there was, even though I know why, Jocasta wasn't on that on that cover. You would think she would have been. That's just
oh, all. Yeah. I thought you were going to tell us why she wasn't.
No. I'm just noticing that she was. Well, I mean, no, I'm not going to say it because I don't actually know.
Why? Would you put the ex-wife on the family tree?
Well, that was kind of along the lines of what I was thinking. But I
thought she was more Machine Man's like ex-wife.
She was made to be Ultron's wife, which would still bear relation to Vision and everybody else along there. So that's why I wasn't sure why they didn't put her on there. But, you know, being that she's a character that's been often overlooked anyway for various reasons, that's probably why they didn't put her on the cover. But as far as what happened in the story, here we see where things start to go really bad and the self-fulfilling prophecy starts to come into things. So we see Vision and his family on basically house arrest in this, and Vision is kind of going through some, kind of talking it over with his wife, Viv. Wait, was Viv's wife? I get them mixed up.
The daughter's Viv,
yes. Virginia is the wife, excuse me. That's right. So they get them confused. So, and you're forgiving, because like I said, this was last week, so I'm trying to remember. But basically, there's that whole conversation about what's going on, the situation at hand, even though we don't get to see. Because this basically happens after the last issue, they're incarcerated, but we don't see that happen, so, which is kind of part of whatever, maybe they're going to come back to that. We only have two issues left, but who knows if that conversation is even, you know, important enough to put in there. But, yeah, like I said, we pretty much see that, and then we see Vision kind of working some things out and go to a point to where he's going to take some action. And the end of the book has said action getting prepared for it by the people who have him, who are looking over for him. Yeah.
Go ahead.
Well, I'm just going to say, the thing that stood out to me is that you really, for characters that may or may not be people, they may or may not be living, they may or may not, you know, have a soul or however you want to look at it, they have a programming. And the programming is set to deal with certain issues in certain ways, and when the programming fails, there is something that they fall back to that is a humanity. So when the programming doesn't work, then there is this part of them that emerges from within as the programming breaks down, and then they become more real by the fact that the program isn't there to give them the rules. And so I just found that very interesting, the way that they've set the whole story up, that, you know, this is the point where everything is really shifting and changing because of what's going on in the story, is that you're seeing, if you didn't believe that they were real before, like Data on Next Generation, if you didn't feel like he had a soul, that he was just a robot, he's following that program, now that they're doing something that the program isn't designed to deal with and work around, now's the part where you do see them come to life, so to speak, in the midst of everything else. As they break down, they're really breaking out and becoming true characters, true people, in a sense. And so I found this issue to be one of the best of the entire series, even though technically they have dinner, they pick up some garbage, they stare at the wall, they play back some memories, and Vision flies off. Like, that's about it. Like, that's everything that happens in this book. Like, nothing really happens, but yet at the same time, everything happens in this book. Like, this is the book where everything goes down, everything starts to come together, everything changes, everything works out, and it's all logical. Like, everything happens in a way that makes sense, and we see things that have been set up, the lighter from Captain America in the past. It wasn't just thrown in before because they wanted to kill some time or just give you some atmosphere. It's because now the lighter plays a part in the story, and so you needed it to be there, and you needed to understand what it was and where it came from and what it's made of so that its part can be played in the story. So, like I said, nothing really happened, but so much happened in this book. Like, it's one of those issues that just blows your mind when you read it. Right. This is obviously one of this is going to be my click. I mean, I don't think that's a secret for anybody. This is just a fantastic book. I love this. This is one of those issues that just, it haunts you after you're done reading it. And it saddens me that it's going to be ending, because this, much like Sheriff of Babylon, it's just one of the best books on the market, period, ever, of all time.
But I think the fact that it's ending actually makes it more enjoyable for me, knowing it's like a really good season of a show. Like, I know I'm going to miss it, and so I'm enjoying every moment when I do read it.
And there's no filler.
Right.
Like, you don't have to go, we have to publish, like, 6 more issues, so let's have them go to the supermarket and be very confused about breakfast cereal, You don't have to throw that stuff in here, because it has a limit of where it starts and where it stops, and everything has a point.
Hmm. Yeah. I do have a question about the cover, though. Speed and Billy and Wiccan on the cover, but they haven't appeared yet, right? In the series.
No.
Right.
Okay. Because everyone else except for Hank Pym has probably appeared on the series. Okay. Well, no, Simon Williams hasn't, only in flashback. I'm just curious. I'm wondering if they show up sometime later, but I don't think he's going to do anything.
Yeah, okay. I was kind of wondering about that myself, and yeah, I suspect not, because I figured they just had them on the tree just because they were family, but not necessarily going to be fixture, but yeah, that'd be funny if they did, I guess. But actually, Dirk, I'm glad you brought up the thing about the soul and the item, the lighter type stuff, because it also brings up the fact that, yeah, the underlying thing of us having, of these synthesoids having a soul, or has been kind of weaving in and out of the whole story, and this has probably been the biggest time that's been, brought up. Like, you've seen little things here and there that they talk about in past issues that kind of bring it up. And also, you see that, just like Captain America's lighter got brought up, you see other things that get brought up, during the course of the whole story that seem to have some significance, at least not at the time that you see them, but will play or have seemed to have played a part in the story. There's, like, one more item that I'm curious if that's going to get any use or not, or if that was actually just there for a display. But they keep coming back to this one item, and you kind of wonder what the significance of that is, especially now since these other items have had some uses, like piano and Captain America's lighter.
Yeah, and, they, like you mentioned, they talked before about whether or not they're actually alive because they're synthetic humans, but we always think of life in this sense of, are they really thinking or are they not thinking? Are they just following the program, or is there some sort of understanding? But this one, I think, really reached out into a more eternal type question, as opposed to just, are they capable of making decisions, or is everything following a script that's been pre-programmed into them? I think now we finally start to break into, like, a bigger, more existential question of, is there life beyond death, and if there is life beyond death for them? And that, changes, I think, the epic scale of the story. And so that's just another reason why I think it's so good.
Not to digress, but did you notice, like, last week and this week, we had Vision, then we have, Ultron in Ultron and Hank Pym in Uncanny Avengers, and we have Vision in the Avengers,
new, all
Avengers
book, Avengers.
All new, all different, and then Scarlet Witch, too. So I thought it was pretty interesting. In these 2 weeks, we had so much of them.
Yeah. Which actually, I guess we can go ahead and bring up Scarlet Witch real quick. So this is pretty much Wanda catching up to Secret Wars 2. Quicksilver comes for a visit to her apartment. They have Quicksilver comes to get him because he wants her to use her powers to change people's minds, just as a force, basically, against the people,
against Captain Marvel.
Right. and she's not having any of it because, you know, she recognizes that he just wants her to, as he has done in the past, and this all gets brought up because their history kind of gets talked about. Like, she's trying to get him to say, hey, look, I've just found out some more information about our actual real mother, and he's off trying to get her to do, you know, the thing he wants to do, as he's always done in the past. So they end up having this conversation, which turns into a mini fight and turns into a bit of a breaking apart between the two who have, you know, seemingly been so close all these years, but now there's kind of a break between there. She really kind of reads Pietro in this one also to a point, because she's like, everything he's ever done, she's ever done, has been this and that and the other, and then the way he acts, you know, just shows up really plain and clear, as it always does. You realize how much of a dick he actually is, you know. Scientifically, I mean, speaking,
she blames him for House of M. She says, "You basically, because I followed what you wanted me to do, I basically ruined my life."
And I think not just that, but yeah, that specifically, and you know, and all of the major things that have happened, pretty much with her, and have gone wrong, she's blaming him on him, which, looking back on it, you can kind of say that's true. Actually, especially House of M. Yeah. So, but yeah, that was actually a pretty good read for that. There was even a Forceworks reference, which, you know. Eh.
No, yeah, I caught that. That was awesome.
Yeah.
But I gotta say, I'll just be really quick. I think James Robinson and the rotating cast of artists for Scarlet Witch, I think it's an underappreciated book for Marvel. I think it's not for everyone, but James Robinson really dives deep when he goes into a comic book universe, and I think they do a really good job of pairing artists to the story. Like next month, there's going to be a story set in Japan, and I can't wait to see which artist they pick.
Yeah, indeed, you're absolutely right about that.
Who was the artist on this issue?
Jones.
Yeah, I'm not sure.
Joelle Jones.
Okay. Oh, I like her. Yeah. Her art's good. She's DC exclusive now, right? Am I getting my Joneses mixed up?
Are you having problems teaching up now with the Joneses?
Apparently.
She's from the House of L, so why wouldn't she be DC?
Yeah, Joelle Jones. Let's see. Okay, I actually might read this issue because the art's good.
Yeah.
All right. Let's see. What else came out?
Are we doing last week or we're doing this week? Or we're just mixing through?
I guess we can mix. Uncanny Avengers was mentioned earlier. I did read that from this week. It was the end of the Hank Pym, Ultron sort of epic that involved guest appearances from Wasp and Vision and Tony Stark, Iron Man, kinda, sorta. As we get the nice cover there.
Did anybody buy the Sum Sum variant?
Wait, what Sum Sum? Can someone tell me what that is?
It's some Chinese thing that's like their Beanie Babies or whatever. That's like a hot thing over there. So Marvel made a deal to bring them over here and license the crap out of it. So
they've been slowly kind of coming over here. But,
yeah, well, Disney. Yeah, Disney's doing it. So,
yeah,
you're starting to see Sum Sums like everywhere. Mickey Mouse and the Marvel ones they're doing now. And
I guess they're trying to make them the new Pops or something. I don't know.
God, yeah.
No one sent me the memo. I'm Chinese. No one sent me that memo.
Yeah.
You're not real Chinese. I mean, you're like Panda Express. I mean, you're. I'm going to stop now. I'm going to stop now.
By the way, Panda Express is actually pretty good.
So. Actually, yeah, I like Panda Express.
Yeah, I was going to say.
And you know they will not release the recipe for their chicken.
Orange chicken. Yeah.
They will not release that recipe. And they just reopened in Manhattan. And it's actually pretty packed.
Ad read for Panda Express tonight on Comic Chronicles.
Please send all free coupons to all of us on Twitter now. Thank you.
Yeah.
Actually, I just got to say, I'm just to throw this out there for absolutely no reason, but I went to Illinois State University, and in my dorm, instead of a cafeteria, we had a food court because it was a 25-story building, several thousand students. So they had a food court, and we had a Chick-fil-A and a Panda Express and a Sbarro's Pizza and a Subway. We're all in our building. And I got to say, when you can buy Panda Express by using just your regular food card, you know,
it's a G-code.
It's one of those things where it's like they talk about the freshman 15. It was more like the freshman 45 for everybody.
Especially at Chick-fil-A.
Yeah, I know. Chick-fil-A is always closed on Sunday, so you're always like, oh. But then it's like, oh, well, hey, I'll get some pizza, I'll get some crab rangoons, I'll get some orange chicken, I'm going to get, just so much good stuff there. So, yeah, just throwing it out there for absolutely no reason, but hey, if you want to send some coupons or some free samples, it's dirt@popculturenetwork.com. Back to the show.
We just got a Panda Express here, like, within the last 8 months, 8 to 10 months, something like that. I'm going to stop and smoke. Yeah, it's pretty good stuff. So, send them all. Anyway.
Back to comments.
And
to end it, there was a Panda Express in the city I just moved to, so I've yet to try it yet. The wife has. I haven't had it yet. I've had it before. It's been years, but
I'm kind of looking forward to it.
Well, Matt tweets at Panda Express. So,
uncanny.
During the battle, so the Avengers initiate Project Icarus, which I guess is similar to what was
Hulkbuster.
Was used in the Age of Ultron movie, is what I'm trying to say, where the Hulkbuster armor comes out of space. Tony Stark actually isn't piloting the armor; he's doing it remote control or remotely. The Hulkbuster armor encapsulates Ultron. They get the armor in a ship, and the plan is to shoot Ultron into the sun. During this plan, Brother Voodoo casts a spell to, I guess, distract Hank Pym / Ultron. He learns that Ultron and Hank, while they were in space, killed a lot of different alien races and went around bragging about how he's an Avenger, and if you want payback, come to Earth. So we're trying to set the Earth up for a reckoning, which I'm wondering if that's going to be played out later down the line. But either way, Vision plays a trick on Ultron, sort of like he's taunting Ultron, saying how he thinks he's the Avengers' greatest villain, but he's never defeated or killed an Avenger. And then Ultron shouts, "I killed Hank Pym," which Vision uses as a way to show that Hank Pym is gone. They don't have to feel guilty about they're fighting their ex-teammate, because Ultron has admitted that he's gone now. So with that, they shoot him into the sun. Everyone's all depressed still because, yes, Hank's gone and they feel bad. But then at the end, somehow Ultron, Hank teleports away or something, and he's in a bubble and like meditating, and it ends with one of those the end for now ? Type deals.
So basically,
he'll be back.
So basically, it ends the same way the Rage of Ultron graphic novel ended, sounds like.
Yeah, almost exactly the same way. Right. So this was like a nice, four-issue story. I'm a fan of the artist that came on that replaced Ryan Stegman, who I think he's going to stay on the series as Stegman moves over to the Spider-Man Renew Your Vows series. The Kanan artist, whose name's escaping me. Shit. Who is this? Pepe Larraz. Had to look at the cover.
I love the fact that they had the Hulkbuster and that they brought in other Avengers teams.
Yeah.
And they had a plan. It was like, if Ultron comes back, we have a plan.
Yeah, they weren't caught off guard, even though they weren't expecting him to be merged with Hank. They still, they brought Wasp in to question him and see if she could gleam anything from her interactions with them, and then they brought Vision in because Ultron's story, you gotta have Vision, and then they brought Iron Man in. Each issue had like a new guest star to come in. It wasn't just the Unity Squad taking on Ultron. They called in for backup. So
yeah, and did you notice that Vision quote that, and he basically said the same thing Ultron said, and Wasp caught that. So I thought that was pretty interesting.
Yeah.
And they had a plan without it being a Vision from Ulysses. Sounds like.
So next issue will finally tie into Civil War, because I was like, oh, maybe Uncanny Avengers is skipping Civil War. But then, since Civil War is going to be like complete in 4 months from now, they got plenty of time to tie in. Which we'll get into in news.
Yes, yeah, we will.
Let's see. Superwoman number one came out this week, or last week.
Last week.
I like the little switcheroo of the twist they introduced in that.
I really like this book. this book was really good. I thought it was one of my favorites this week, or last week, or whatever week it came out.
Yeah.
Yeah, this is not what I thought it was. Like, I didn't pay. I've been trying, actually, the last few months to stay out of solicits and let things come at me more as they come out so I can experience them as opposed to, you know, always looking through everything, planning, and, you know, seeing what's coming out, getting spoilers and whatever. And so, honestly, Superwoman, I thought this was going to be a story with the villain that we've seen in the Justice League books. And
Is this a regular cover? Okay.
Yeah, this is the normal cover. And that's not the character that we got. That's not what the book is about. But what the book is about actually makes sense and ties into other stuff that's happened in the New 52. But what I found even more interesting was that they played with the fact that two characters, I don't know how much of this we want to spoil, but two characters got hit with the radiation when the New 52 Superman died. They both took on powers, but one took on the traditional Superman powers, and one took on powers like when Superman turned electrical. And they had the red and the blue electric versions of Superman running around. And they played with that in this book, which I found just so entertaining. I just love when they go back, especially bad ideas, when you bring them back and then try to make them fun and entertaining. I just loved it. And this book was a lot more fun than I expected. We got a surprise ending, which I don't know if that's the one of the characters may or may not ever be seen again. I don't know, but it doesn't look good. But it was just, again, it was not what I expected. It kind of hit me out of nowhere. It was really good. I enjoyed it a lot, and I'm really looking forward to seeing where it goes.
I really like the fact they packed so much story. There were a lot happened this issue, right?
And right.
Talk about the past and the present. There was, you know, unlike Suicide Squad, I felt like this was like a 64-page issue because Jimenez, he packed so much story in like every page. There were 12 panels almost every page, and you know he mixed it up a little bit.
Yeah. You actually felt like you got a story and not just like an introduction. Like this felt like it was an entire episode of a show or an obviously it ends on the cliffhanger, but still, this was very satisfying. To sit down and read. In fact, it's one of those where I read it to do the review of it on a Tuesday, but then I sat down again a couple days later. I was going through the stuff, and I said, you know what? I'm going to read that again because that was so much fun, and I enjoyed it. And again, I don't know where it's going, and I don't know if the cliffhanger ending that we got is actually what it appears to be or if there's going to be some sort of secret hidden thing that you don't know is coming, whatever. But I'm very entertained by it, and I'm really looking forward to the next one.
Possible click of the week. Whichever week.
Well, except Vision came out, so.
Ah. Alright, let's see. What came out this week?
On the Marvel side, it was a whole lot of Civil War Titans.
Yeah, and I haven't read many of them. Mm-hmm. Let's see, Batman number 5 was kind of underwhelming to me this week. I think it was issue 5 that I saw Tom King tweeting about a couple days ago or a week or so ago saying how he was excited for it and all this big stuff was going to happen. And then I read it, expecting all this stuff, and I was like, oh, okay, nothing really happened. I mean, it was fine, but maybe I got hyped myself up too much.
The thing that I enjoyed about it was less the actual story that we were getting and more about what we actually learned about these new heroes. And the way that it's narrated gives you some clues about what may be coming in the future, which I don't know how much of that is legit and how much of that is just Tom King playing with us, because he's such an awesome writer that does great stuff like that, especially on books like Vision, which is my click of the week, I'm wondering how much of this is the truth that's being narrated and how much you're getting from I forget what the term is called, where you have the narrator who you can't trust, the blank narrator, nobody took English lit class. Okay.
Did, but I don't remember.
But anyway, you're hearing things that may or may not be true of things that are coming in the future that we hear about some of these characters. And I was just really intrigued more by what we got about their history and what may be coming in the future than the actual, like, you know, plot, the action of this particular issue.
Yeah, I wrote in my notes, actually, after the website issues I was having last night, I never finished my review posts for some of the DC Rebirth titles for this week, but for Batman number 5, I wrote how I was like, "Oh, is King dropping some hints or giving some foreshadowing for future stuff that's supposed to happen in the future?"
Mm-hmm.
Between two central characters, apparently. So something to look forward to. Another super family book that surprised me was Supergirl Rebirth number 1, came out this week.
Mm-hmm.
So it sort of melded the DC version of Supergirl with the former CBS, now CW version of Supergirl, where they resolved the whole storyline of how she had lost her powers pre-rebirth. We see her regaining her powers here after the DEO shoots her towards the sun to revitalize herself.
Yeah.
And in return for getting her powers back, she decides she has to work with them to fight threats. And then they set up her foster family, the Danvers, and her secret identity of Kara Danvers. And they introduce a threat from her past, or her father's past, from whatever city, Argo or something like that.
Yeah, Argo City, yeah.
And that's really about it. I don't think I missed anything.
The two things I didn't like, and these are, not major by any stretch of the imagination. I thought the artwork was fantastic. I thought this was some of the best artwork Lou Piccino's done. But the two things that bothered me were, one, we had the villain, we had to get this introduction of the villain that they had to throw in there to show him going into the Phantom Zone so that later on you could see him come out and go on the rampage and fight. And I felt like it was one of those things where the shuttle that they send her off in is, the engine is reverse engineered from some sort of Phantom Zone projector. They make what they call the Phantom Engine that shoots her off. And so that causes this rip that allows him to come through. It could have been just very simply, hey, oh, the thing that we made caused this rip, and here's this villain who came out of the Phantom Zone, and now we have to fight him, and they can throw in that there's some sort of connection later on, instead of wasting this time at the beginning showing this character, just to have him come back later. Like, I much prefer, if you're going to do something with a character in that type of thing, that you do it as a subplot that plays out over a couple issues, instead of just, like, in the opening of the book, we see the past, and there he is. And then 10 pages later, he pops back up. It was like, well, obviously he was going to, because they wasted this time at the beginning, as opposed to, playing it out. And the other thing that kind of bugged me was that they spent all this time with, she's getting her powers, and she has this big fight, and things are getting blown up, and things are getting thrown around, and throwing punches, and blah, blah, blah. Oh, by the way, here's your new family, here's your new life, here's your new school, see you later. And
yeah, the second half of the book kind of sped up quickly to have like a resolution for.
Yeah, instead of establishing, like, I felt it would have been better if they had established the story with the new life and then kind of worked it backwards to explain how she gets there.
Mm-hmm.
Instead of just being like this thing at the end, like, oh yeah, by the way, here, you're a teenager going to school, here's your parents later. To me, that just kind of felt missed. But by no means are those like killer on the book. Those don't, make it, it's not like it goes from a thumbs up to a thumbs down because of that. It was still a fun read. I liked the character. Again, I thought the artwork was just fantastic in this book. So overall, I enjoyed it. Just a couple little things that nitpick.
Cool.
All right.
That's sweet. Good.
Well, let's talk about the Civil War Amazing Spider-Man. Did anybody else read that one?
Nope. Only read the first issue of that so far.
Okay. honestly, the story I thought was fine until like the last two pages, maybe, because the ending, everything looks like it's going to work out. Everything's fine. We find out that Clash wasn't really going rogue. He was just trying to get to the underworld so that he could, take people down, and everything was working out. And then suddenly, he just like snaps and turns evil. And it didn't really seem to fit the story, and it didn't seem to fit other stuff that was going on with the character. It was just, like, out of the blue, he just has to turn evil because there's another issue. And the artwork in this book, in a lot of places, was actually pretty terrible. There were a couple spots where, there's a scene through skyscraper windows, and it looks like they literally just took a ruler, and it's like straight line, there's the edge of the building, You know, straight line, there's the line for the windows. Straight line, there's another line for the windows. Like, just very basic artwork with not a lot of detail, not a lot of expressions going on, not a lot of, you know, shadow and stuff like that. It just, I don't know if it was rushed or, you know, what the deal is, but there were several places where it just completely fell apart, and in many cases it looked ugly in the artwork. So, again, I liked the story up until the ending, but the artwork was just not consistent throughout the book, and it just fell apart in a bunch of places.
Okay. Anyone keeping up with the Civil War X-Men title?
I read it. I read it only because my son wants to read all the Civil War stuff, so we've been getting all the Civil War stuff.
What's his thoughts on Civil War?
He's on Stark's side, I can tell you that much. We actually had a pretty long conversation about it the other day, and he's like, you can't go and attack people and throw them in jail for stuff they haven't done yet. Like, that's like his understanding. I'm like, I agree. nonetheless, in this particular story, it looks like Magneto wants to steal Ulysses, and so they're doing some underhanded things, going after the Inhumans and sneaking into their world and whatever, and then you find out that Magneto's plan, what you thought he was doing is not actually what he's doing. It was more of throwing everybody on a wild goose chase, and he actually has other plans in mind that are actually a lot more terrible, I guess you could say, for the mutants, or for the Inhumans. So he is setting up this war between the mutants and the Inhumans, and it's very blatant in your face. All the jokes that we make about the mutants taking a backseat to the Inhumans now in the Marvel Universe, mm-hmm. Like all of that type of stuff is exactly what they're playing with in the story. So it's interesting, although for me, I have not been an avid X-Men reader for a long time, so a lot of times I'm kind of confused. I don't know who this character is or, you know, what's going on with that person. Certain people just show up and start doing stuff, and I'm not exactly sure, like, who is this? Like, why are they there? But, you know, I guess that's what Wikipedia is for. But there has been some fun stuff, and Magneto is a good character, you know, especially when he's a villain and not an anti-hero, as they've been doing with him in the last few years. When he is dastardly, as he is in this story, it's a lot of fun. So there is some good stuff on here. I'm just not sure if anything that's happening in this book is actually going to have any long-term effect one way or another. It seems like it may be one of those books that they do just to fill time and put the X-Men name on something in the big crossover, but I'm not sure if it's actually going to play out as to anything with any long-lasting effects.
Okay. If Agent 70 was here, he would bring up the Gods of War number 3 Civil War tie-in, but I'm not sure if anyone else is keeping up with that.
Yeah, again, I read it because my son. They do make a joke about the Avengers are bad friends with Hercules because he had a man bun and no one told him how terrible it looked, which is a fair criticism. But, I mean, really, it's taking place during Civil War, but it doesn't actually have anything to do with Civil War, which allows them to just kind of have some fun with it. So it's a fun story to look at how the relationships between heroes in the Marvel Universe can become strained, just like any other, you know, friendship, anything else. But, again, it doesn't really have a deep tie-in to Civil War. It's just a chance for them to do another Hercules story. And so it's interesting, but not really a key book that you're going to need to read for Civil War.
And what else we have?
Here, I've got a couple, if you want to go ahead and rattle through them. First, let me get to... Well, since we're doing Civil War, Spider-Woman number 10. Here we have Jessica being tasked by Carol to kind of look into some of the visions that Ulysses has been having, and Jessica's been kind of out trying to debunk them, basically, and with the exception of the last one that her and Ben Urich come across, all of it have come true. The last one seemed to almost not come true until, you know, a couple of seconds later, and then we cut to... Jessica talking to Carol while basically catching up to the fact that the Bruce Banner's been murdered, and that's where the story ends up ending up, because, you know, like I said, while Jessica's talking to Carol, there's news flash going on and Ben's trying to get Jessica's attention, you know, talking about what's been going on that front with Hawkeye and, you know, the fact that Banner's dead and Hawkeye's, you know, one to one, and that leads to Jessica being in a huff, which is, I'm assuming, is going to play out next issue. And that's where that goes. And I guess we can also shoot to Ultimates number 10, where the team has gone slightly off mission. They are actively going, using the visions and going after people. In this case, they're going after this young lady who has no prior record, but apparently there was a vision that said she was going to have this briefcase that was going to, that has something in it that was going to cause a whole bunch of ruckus in the financial district. What we come to find out is that briefcase is empty, which brings the Ultimates in a you know, meeting to them in themselves, which they were already kind of, you can already see the lines being split between them, but this kind of brings up the fact that, you know, what's been going on, and the lines are being more definedly drawn. And, which I thought was kind of funny, in the course of the conversation, they was asked, well, Carol asked, are you all on my side or not? Because we need to cement this up. And America Chavez answers with a chair to Captain Marvel's face and a table, which kind of reminded me of some wrestling shit. But I also thought it was funny. Another funny part of that was just like, okay, there was a part of Secret Wars last year where America Chavez, which I guess that's what kind of sparked A-Force, ended up being the catalyst for some things that happened. So I thought that was kind of interesting. But yeah, so they have that little, they have a little bit of a brawl after that, but then something comes up that takes their attention in the form of Connor Sims and Thanos, who apparently is had a plan for some things in it, and that plan is going forward as we speak. Which brings me to question something. Do we know if this is actual Thanos? Because he's been doing this whole series, he's kind of been doing some things with that has not been very Thanos-like. So that's been a curious thing for me.
I mean, when he showed up in the free comic book day with the big, like, cable assault rifle on his shoulder. But I assume it's him.
Yeah, exactly. And this, when he displays some sort of psychic powers, which I don't... Well, I guess he has... By nature, it has some low-level psychic powers, now that I think about it. But I don't know. I don't remember them ever being used to the effect as they have in this one. But, yeah. So at the end of this, that's like I said, Thanos kind of exacts his plan, and apparently the Ultimates are headed for a showdown next issue.
So are you getting the feeling that this is just a tiff to put some drama in the story, or do you think that they're going to do something with splitting the team?
And I'm glad you said that, because, yes, I do exactly think that it's a tiff, because some of it just doesn't make... Like, going from... You can see how they could go from here to there, but as fast as it went escalated in this, or quickly escalated and kind of died down because of the bigger threat in this issue, just seems a little rushed, you know? Because I'm like, okay, anybody knows that Maker Chavez, she's kind of hot-headed, and you get that, but from going to, it's like, yeah, I see what I'm about to do about this, to actually, you know, going to do what she did, you know, in the course of the last few issues, just seems like, that doesn't seem weird to just kind of fly off like that, even though she kind of has reason, but it still doesn't make any sense, so... Yeah, I think they just kind of just threw that in there to build something, because, like, especially with this team, it doesn't kind of matter. Even the fact that in issues past, they were like, they basically made this, like, Carol's kind of the force behind getting this team together, sort of, when it wasn't originally built as that kind of thing. It was kind of an end around that was weird. So, I don't know. Which kind of brings me to a bigger thing with Civil War in itself, which, you know, I've already ranted on that, and I'll probably, when we get to a new story later on, I'll bring that up, so... Usually I like Ultimates, and this was a pretty good read, but there was still some parts of it that was like, I don't know, seems weird.
All right, let's see.
Mockingbird number 6. So let me just go ahead and get these two out of the way then. And Mockingbird number 6, she's on a nerd cruise. This is a Civil War tie-in, and that tie-in is because of Hawkeye's on trial, which she's basically trying to get away from, but she can't because, one, the nerd cruise was supposed to have no Hawkeye on it, but due to his troubles, it's not happening. Hunter is there for some reason, but she helps him along. There's this guy who supposedly has some information that will probably free Hawkeye, or at least turn the case around, but that ends up seemingly not being the case. In fact, that ends up being a dead end. But it's a pretty fun read because you see her kind of just floating through the ship doing this and that and other, and you see like little references like D&D and a bunch of cosplay, this and that. So Mockingbird ends up still being a pretty good book to read, and the tie-in is kind of, well, it's not necessarily light, because obviously, you know, Hawkeye's on trial and that's her ex, kind of comes in place, and she's kind of worried about that, and she's actually on this mission, on this ship, and on this mission to try to find something to, you know, some information to get him set free, but so far it's not coming up anything good. But it was a good, enjoyable read, though. Power Man and Iron Fist, number 7, I think that's the last Civil War one I've got. We have Danny in jail, we have Luke trying to figure out how to, either, one, get him out, and two, figuring out what he should be doing now. He's talking to Jessica during other supports throughout spots of the issue, and she's kind of been holding it together because he's thinking, well, he needs to be doing this. In fact, has some weird plan to bust Danny out of jail. But at the same time, he's also trying to be on the trail of some stuff that come up in the past couple of issues, and some technology that he is now in possession of, thanks to a robbery from last year that ended up getting Danny put in jail. So, and they're starting to kind of piece that stuff together. And in the meantime, we have Danny in jail, you know, basically in a place. Like, this is kind of a more self-destructive Danny, sounds like. He calls Misty Knight, which was a cool thing to you know, in the beginning. And Luke was kind of wondering why he called her instead of calling him. And they then, and Misty and Luke kind of had that talk about it. And then on the other side with Jessica Jones, she's kind of doing an investigation on what's been kind of going on behind the scenes. And Colleen Wing is with her, you know, taking care of Danielle. So you got the Daughters of the Dragon there, so in some respect. You also get the Sons of the Tiger, a couple of Sons of the Tigers show up that are also kind of loosely involved with what's going on, with helping with the case also, which is a pretty decent pool, you know, a pretty cool pool.
When have we last seen the Sons of the Tiger?
Jeez, see, that's exactly. I don't even remember. That was like, wow, this is a deep cut. So, but yeah, but it was good to see all of them, even though if, you know, with what respective roles that they played in the issue. And I'm guessing there's going to be a little bit more than that. Obviously, you know, Misty having history with the guys would be, and Colleen would be a no-brainer for them to show up at some point. So it was cool to see them on the various sides that they were. And I think we end off with Danny in jail getting into a little scuffle with some folks while Luke is pretty much trying to hatch a plan to either to bust him out or get talked out of, you know, busting him out, but still trying to figure out what's going on the side of that.
All right. Let's get into clicks of the week and just combine the 2 weeks because we still got news to get to.
Yeah.
Vision. Done.
Pretty good pick.
So we got one for Vision. I'm trying to think. I had one earlier now. you know, every week the Mighty Thor comes out, even though I didn't talk about it tonight. Quickly, I can go over Mighty Thor, the Exterminatrix and Silver Samurai are trying to do a hostile takeover of the Dario Agger from Roxxon's corporation, which has, and now in retaliation, he's initiated the Agger imperative. Is it Agger?
Yeah.
His name is Agger. Yeah, Agger Imperative, where his floating city or base is going to slam into New York and kill a bunch of people. So, of course, now Ross Solomon and Jane Thor have to save him. Of course, him being the villain, they would like nothing better than to see him get his comeuppance. But it makes for some good scenes. There's two S.H.I.E.L.D. agents that are investigating Jane Foster's tie to this new Thor, and apparently they went to Asgard and found a cell phone or something that Jane Foster has. Anyway, she's been texting Sam Wilson, who is the new Captain America, so they're like, why would Jane Foster, of all people, be texting Captain America unless she's Thor? And somehow they make the leap that she's been faking her cancer the entire time, I guess, because, you know, if she's Thor, she can't have cancer. And then it ends with Jane Foster coming off the Bifrost to aid Thor, because Thor's been, she caught a golden bullet from Exterminatrix, and of course, it was coated with her father's blood or something like that. So it has to, you know, if he touches you, you turn to gold. So since he caught the golden bullet, like, you can see, like, her veins starting to turn the color of gold. So Jane Foster has shown up to save the day. But how can Jane Foster and Thor be in the same place at the same time? Find out next issue. But it's every month it's probably one of the most beautiful books I see on the shelves. Russell Dauterman doing the pencils. And I think he does the inks too. But matte color, I love matte colors. Matt Wilson's colors, I should say, are great. So that's my click of the week.
Before I do mine, I want to bring up real quick. Black Widow number 6 teased a meeting between Black Widow and Iron Man, because apparently Natasha is partially responsible for Tony becoming Iron Man, because she kidnapped the scientist who was with Tony when he got captured. So Tony comes to find out if it was actually true and actually exacts some revenge, but Widow kind of fakes him out, giving him the story. They talk for a little while, and then she ends up getting some information from Tony, and we finally find out who the real Weeping Tiger is, and Widows have the upper hand on it. It was a pretty good read. I enjoyed it, but that is not my click of the week, which would be Vision for last week, but this week will be probably Mockingbird number 6, because it was enjoyable.
Okay. Did you have one, Matt Wing?
Superwoman. It was between Superwoman and Vision. I think Superwoman just surprised me so much. And, you know, it's very hard as a jaded, longtime comic book fan to be wondering what's going to happen next. And it gave me that feeling again. That's why.
Cool. All right. So we can move on to the news. Again, it's going to be 2 weeks worth of news.
Do you do an ad read?
You got it up, Roddy?
I do. Let's see. Adam and Eve, one of these days. Anyway, keep our podcast free by shopping at Amazon. Visit csbn.us, then click our Keep Our Podcast Free link at the top of the page. From there, scroll down and click on the Amazon link to shop. Purchase items from Amazon as you normally would, whether it's books, music, electronics, jewelry, apparel, etc. Maybe just princesses when it comes out. For every purchase made on Amazon through a link, Amazon sends the CSPN a payment that helps keep the Comic Chronicles podcast free for our listeners at no extra cost to you. Amazon.com through CSPN.us. Do it today.
Cha-ching, cha-ching.
All right,
I'm going to get through some of this quickly because the show's kind of running long.
Mm-hmm.
Transformer. This is cinematic news, by the way.
You don't know, last week's or this week's?
Is this last week's at the top?
Where are you? Oh, that's this week's. Last week's on the next sheet.
Oh, it's 2 sheets. Okay, so let me jump to last week's. Give me a second here. All right, cinematic news from last week. Marvel and ABC are meeting to discuss a new series in 2 weeks. Obviously, this has nothing to do with what's going to be in the news from this week, I believe.
Right.
We'll get to that later. See if I can jump down. So another Jessica Jones star is gearing up for the Defenders. Who is
Patsy
that
Walker.
Person? Okay.
We don't know if that's actually true, though. We just see her training, so we don't know if that's actually the case or not.
Got the new Luke Cage trailer.
It was dope.
Good.
Misty Knight's not appearing in Iron Fist.
Yeah, so there was a rumor that she was going to be, or there was something floating around this year she was going to be, and that turns out not to be true.
She could possibly spin off into her own series on Netflix, possibly, maybe. Stranger Things sensation Shannon Barb Purser wants to play Squirrel Girl, because everyone wants to play Squirrel Girl nowadays. Spider-Man Homecoming cast Orange is the New Black's Michael Chernus as the Tinkerer. That's that dude with the green shirt, right? In the comics.
The Tinkerer?
Yeah.
I can't remember.
He does stuff.
Okay, yeah, I'm thinking about the Thinker, I think. His name is.
Oh, yeah, you're thinking the Matt Thinker?
Yeah, Matt Thinker is what I'm thinking of. Oh, Arrow cast Dolph Lundgren as villain in Season 5 flashbacks.
That's pretty exciting. Drago.
I know, right?
He-Man!
Oh, yeah, sorry.
How could you forget the cinematic masterpiece of Masters of the Universe in which he starred as He-Man?
Because I was watching Beastmaster.
And that He-Man movie was terrible?
What?
Oh, come on.
So the Arrow, Flash, and Supergirl and Legends of Tomorrow crossover will have one unifying threat. That's not really news, because of course they would have a unifying threat if they're going to crossover.
Well, not necessarily, because I think basically what the article says is like, yeah, in the past they've had, the other ones kind of had a couple of things going on, and this one's just going to be, like, I think the last one had one threat, but I think the couple previous kind of had a couple of things, like the Arrow one and the Flash one kind of had a couple of things, different things going on, and it wasn't just one threat.
I pitch it's the Legion of Doom.
You would think. That would be pretty good.
Sarah Gray is going to be Stargirl in Legends of Tomorrow.
That's exciting.
The Flash casts its Mirror Master, Grey Damon. Suicide Squad's Harley Quinn and Killer Croc are coming to Gotham eventually. David Ayer apparently revealed which Suicide character killed Robin. And it was the Joker, duh.
Yeah, I was about to say it was who you thought it was.
Poison Ivy's showing up on Gotham in the new set photo.
Yeah, this is a new grown-up one.
Hulu docuseries Limelight to feature Batman co-creator Bill Finger. Man of Steel sequel reportedly in development at Warner Brothers. Aquaman will feature Black Manta as a villain.
We'll get some more news about that.
Bail Organa actor confirms Rogue One cameo. We get a season 3 premiere date for Star Wars Rebels, September 24th. Got a new Rogue One trailer.
That was pretty good.
And Donald Glover is up to play young Lando Calrissian, apparently.
Rumor. Was he asked to, or he's just throwing that out there?
No, I think it was actually, he seemed to be approached by Lucasfilm, possibly. At least that's what the thing was going on. I think he had a meeting with him.
And let's see, in comic news, Thunderbolts and Femme Fatales lead the charge in Marvel's Legends Next fan vote.
Which ended up being Songbird winning that, by the way.
Margaret Bennett's Animosity number 1 at Aftershock Comics sells out, goes to a second and a third printing, which was announced today. Mark's trilogy has sold so many copies the printer ran out of paper. It's good for the graphic novel from John Lewis. Frank Cho matches up Indiana Jones and King Arthur for Skyborn. Alien gets his own coloring book for adults. With Ghost Rider Robbie Reyes showing up in Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D., he's going to star in a new Ghost Rider number 1 in the fall. Valiant Comics joins Quid app to offer first trading card set. Hellboy Into the Silent Sea graphic novel is coming in 2017.
Whoops. Oh, wait, actually, don't worry about that. That's different there, because that stuff is for this week.
Okay. And so now to this week's cinematic news, going backwards again. Transformers the Movie 30th Anniversary Edition trailer came out. Need to check that out later.
Yep, another copy of the movie coming out September 13th, and another copy I shall own.
The good movie, right? We're talking about the 80s one?
Yeah.
The animated movie.
Oh, yeah. All right, just making sure.
Yes.
The one that hasn't been soiled. The one that hasn't been soiled by, what's his face? Hey, Michael Bay. The Transformers Combiner Wars animated series launches on the Go 90 app. Got some look at, speaking of Michael Bay, Transformers Last Night's redesigns classic Decepticon, which is Barricade in his car form.
I think that was also another one of Hot Rod. That was before that, but I didn't put it in there.
Of course. Star Trek Discovery will have a female lead, and be set 10 years before TOS, and feature a gay character, Brian Fuller confirms.
Speaking of transforming, you are right now.
Am I?
Yeah.
I forget what I did last time.
Nope, you're good.
The female lead, she's not the captain, they said.
Right.
She's going to be like the second or third commander.
Yeah.
Kenny Baker, the actor who brought R2-D2 to life, dies at 81. Rest in peace to him and his condolences to his family. Legendary sci-fi actor Lance Henriksen to play JSA hero in Legends of Tomorrow, and he's going to play Obsidian. Obsidian.
Yeah.
These are all characters I know nothing about.
Isn't he a little old for that character? That's Jade's brother.
Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D. cast season 4, or Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D. season 4 cast Mallory Jansen as first life model decoy. Marvel's Runaway gets a TV series order on Hulu. That was big news yesterday. Cyborg may or may not be appearing in the Flash solo film. Michael J. White wants to play Black Manta. Of course he does.
And also at around that same time, Isaiah Washington tweeted about it, and Michael K. Williams also tweeted about wanting a role within that day.
Oh, Project Katniss would be a major baddie on Supergirl Season 2. Mm-hmm. I just know Project Katniss from Young Justice.
And they were in Justice League Unlimited, right?
That's correct, yeah. They did show up.
Justice League star Henry Cavill teases Black Superman costume and new photo. Matt Wayne's favorite upcoming show, DC Comedy Powerless, loses showrunner to creative differences.
That's not a good sign. I'll try to find out more about that.
trailer for animated Firefly fan project is gorgeous, heartbreaking, and perfect. Adam West, Burt Ward, and Julie Namar reunite for a new animated Batman film.
Which I think was the thing that Adam West was teasing a while back.
Let's see, Zendaya will play longtime Spider-Man love interest Mary Jane Watson, which was announced, well, reported tonight. It hasn't been confirmed by Marvel. I think the rat broke it first.
Basically.
Cool.
Skip all that. Arrow Season 5 cast Jessica Jones, actor as Human Target. Down to comic book news. Let's see, what do we have for this week? Boom Studios will celebrate the work of beloved comics artist Brian Stelfreeze with an art book titled The Signature Art of Brian Stelfreeze.
So this is all news, but I just want to bring it up because it's coming next month.
Okay.
Draw more Black Panther, Brian Stelfreeze.
Let's see. Captain America comes home to Brooklyn. It's a comic, a life-size comic cave statue in Prospect Park.
Oh, yeah. So, I got a there's a Twitter person. Well, I won't bring it up, but there's a Twitter person that sent me a picture of them in front of it. It was pretty cool looking.
Civil War II extended to 8 issues. So there's seven, like, odd numbers for series ending. Always seems weird to me.
It used to be more prevalent in the past, though, I thought.
So this will end just how Secret Wars ended, where the Marvel Now will begin before the event that kickstarts it ends.
Yeah, which brings me to what I alluded to earlier. I was like, that was kind of interesting that happened, because basically it's kind of being not necessarily blamed on, but the reason they brought up was like, apparently Issue 5 is going to be late because Marquez and his wife had a kid, so congratulations to them. By the way, happy birthday to Brian Michael Bendis, whatever. So there's that, and now they add, and he also broke the news that they added another issue, and it's like, okay, sure, give the guy with a newborn another issue to deal with while he's, you know, while he's got priorities to do. That makes sense. So, and then I kind of thought about it, I'm like, what's that? I mean, yeah, you're right. That's true. He does have to pay the bill. Yeah, you're right. But, you know, he's got work, so, you know, let the man, you know, deal with the child for a little bit. But, you know, hey, that's between them, and that's good for them, though. But at the same time, it does, like Tim said, it does kind of bring it back to, I was like, yeah, okay. Last year, just pretty much the same thing happened where a book was late, well, for different reasons, obviously, and there's another issue that came out of it. And I felt like, and I'm not saying this is the case or not changing anything about Bendis, but it just feels like, it was like, oh, wait, you gave Hickman another issue. How about give me one so I could do something like this? Not saying that that's actually the case, but that's what it kind of felt like when I read that. So, and at this point, I'm sorry to say I'm kind of tired of Civil War II, and I think I dropped out about the same place in the first Civil War when I finally read it. So,
Robert Kirkman and Ryan Otley are gonna end Invincible.
The end of an era, I guess.
Women.
I read it every month.
And I'm in the 20s still.
Yeah, no, I read it every month, and I was about to drop it and go to just digital, and then he makes his announcement.
According to Marvel's senior sales person, women and kids are key to Marvel's success.
If you get a chance to read the interview, it was David Gabriel doing the interview on ICV2. It's a 3-part interview. It's pretty short read, but it's really interesting when he talks about the difference between what the internet chatter says about Marvel sales and the Marvel books and what the sales numbers are telling.
Yeah.
Well, and the fact that coloring books were forced onto them and they sell really well for Marvel.
Yeah, because you see everyone else doing them now.
Yeah.
Let's see, Babs Tarr, Cameron Stewart, and Brendan Fletcher introduced the Batgirl Bunside to the world of Funko Pop.
Cool.
Oops, scroll too far. Harley Quinn and Deadshot join Injustice 2 and latest Suicide Squad centric trailer. And that is it. So yeah, we're finally caught up for the last 2 weeks of comics and news. And we want to once again thank our guest from earlier tonight, Crystal Velasquez, for joining us.
Wait a minute. And if I keep going.
And we want to thank you for tuning in tonight. You can find us on, of course, theclicknation.com. Special thanks to Matt Wayne for joining us tonight, filling in for 87 minutes.
Thanks for having me.
Let people know where they can find you online.
Just at MattWayne97 on Twitter, and also MattWayne97 on Instagram.
And also a spokesman for Tim Tams.
Yes. I am a source of Tim Tams, if you need some.
You can follow us on Twitter. I'm at TimDLGG98 and at CVCron. Roddy Cat is at Roddy Cat and at News Nerds Need. PCN Dirt is at PCN underscore Dirt. And go to his website, popculturenetwork.com.
And Tim is underwater.
Am I still underwater?
Yes.
Yeah.
I'm just going to say goodnight. We've got a Cop Chronicles, and we are signing off.
Good evening, Rick. Would you believe it's Dr.